Okay, we have an interview coming up, and I'm about 50-50 on her name, pronouncing it correctly.
Good job.
Colleen Patrick Goudreau. And anyway, she is from Compassionate Cooks, and
right.
She has a DVD, and she does cooking classes out outside of San Francisco, Oakland, and she's just a really cool person, Rice for Satya, and, well, we talk about all
and
her projects.
She got something to go with
and
Veg News,
too,
right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And, well, we talk about all her projects during the interview, so have a listen. Okay, we're here with Colleen Patrick Goudreau, founder and director of Compassionate Cooks, and she has a lot of different projects going on and is involved in a lot of different things, so we'll let her tell you about all of that great stuff.
Welcome to the show.
Thanks. Glad to be here.
So maybe you could tell us first about Compassionate Cooks. What is it? When did you start it? All that stuff.
Sure. Compassionate Cooks started officially, I suppose, around 6 years ago when I started teaching cooking classes and really was just responding to what I saw as a missing link for a lot of people who might read about the conditions under which the animals are raised and, or for health reasons, for whatever reason, they would be convinced to go vegetarian, specifically vegan. I say vegetarian as an umbrella term, but we're talking about vegan. All the classes are vegan. The DVD is vegan. And I just found that people were convinced to go, you know, to make a change, but didn't know where to shop and what to buy and what to cook. And, you know, they, of course, ask all the standard questions about protein. Sometimes they ask about protein. And once in a while, they ask about protein. And I just realized that people had a lot of misconceptions about eating vegan. And I just started teaching cooking classes. My background was not in cooking. And I found that it really fills a really important gap. And I really have been following Compassionate Cooks and kind of, you know, figuring out where it's leading me. And so, yeah, I do cooking classes. I do cancer prevention, cancer survival cooking courses through the Cancer Project, which is affiliated with PCRM, the Physicians Committee for Responsible Medicine, that obviously advocates a plant-based diet. Mm-hmm. And because I wanted people to have access to this information who couldn't come to Oakland, California, we produced a DVD about a year ago or more now, and so people can at least give that information to friends, to family, all over the place. And it just keeps growing and growing. My background's in writing, so I have a column with Veg News magazine. I'm a contributing writer to Satya magazine. And I have a biweekly newsletter that goes out, and there's essays in there. And I have a blog and a podcast. So communication, any kind of communication to get the message out there is what Compassionate Cooks focuses on.
Excellent. Your article in the Satya, the most recent issue of Satya, which was September issue, it was really solid. I liked your analysis in it. Maybe you could talk about that briefly.
Thank you. Yeah, that article almost killed me. I had been thinking about that for a long, long time. If you don't live in the San Francisco Bay Area, I think we live in kind of a bubble here. You don't really understand the self-righteousness and complacency of people who consider themselves ethical eaters, the people who are proponents of the humane meat movement, if you will.
Oh, we have them everywhere.
They're everywhere.
Sadly.
You know, in the Bay Area, though, there's, because Alice Waters is here, you know, Chez Panisse, which really started the whole slow food movement out here in the United States and from Italy. And Michael Pollan, of course, is out here. So it's something you hear a lot, and as you said, you hear it everywhere. And it's my hot-button issue, and I'd been thinking about this for a long time, and I really needed to jail my thoughts. And so when I talked to Satya about doing this article, what I was realizing was it was growing into several different articles, and that was really the first of a few that's to come. And that one really focused on the fact that there's no such thing as a humane animal product, because when people talk about the humane aspect, they generally talk about the raising, the keeping of the animals. They're not referring to the breeding and the transportation and the slaughter, and those are three huge components of keeping, confining, and killing animals for human consumption. So I wrote that article to speak to that, to speak to that issue, to speak to those people, and to really educate the public about the impossibility of such a thing. And the second one that's coming in the October issue of Satya really speaks to really speaks to Michael Pollan in many ways, but it really speaks to the whole, the proponents of the humane meat movement and a lot of the ridiculous arguments. So the title, I don't know if they'll keep it, but the title is Dishing Out the Bull, The Rise of the Excusitarians, because they have the most ridiculous excuses I've ever heard to spend so much energy defending consuming animals when the bottom line is you can't get away from the fact that you're creating harm, you're creating violence, you're creating suffering, and you're killing these animals. They spend so much time trying to find ways to defend it. It's just absurd. So that's the October issue of Satya.
Excellent. It is absurd, too. I've had people say to me, well, when I consume an animal that was humanely raised, I'm honoring the spirit of the animal.
I know.
I hate that. That drives me insane.
It is. It drives me insane, too, and I find that the thing that's lacking so much is having a dialogue, and I really feel so privileged to be able to do these cooking classes because, you know, through food, I get to talk about all these issues. I've had people come up to me and say, do you just have a lecture? Can we just come and hear you talk? We just want to hear you talk about these issues. And I said, well, we can do it, but I don't know who's going to come, because if you feed them chocolate cake, they're going to come. But if I just talk about this stuff and I just throw out there, well, we're going to have a discussion on animal rights, the odds are I'd have a lot smaller group. So it's a real privilege to be able to do this because I really have communication all the time with people, and I hear their questions and I hear their concerns and I understand their challenges and their blocks, and I get to really kind of burst all of these myths and debunk all of the bull. And so when I hear those kinds of things, it does drive me crazy, but I won't let them get away with it. At least Excellent. We can say something back that is sound and just says, I mean, I remember a guy came knocking on my door, and he was from an environmental group, and he was soliciting donations, and he said something, you know, when people, it always comes up that I'm vegan because I'm either wearing a shirt or a button, or I just kind of slide into the conversation, and it's so easy to get people to talk about it because all you have to do is say one thing, and they just start their stuff. So he said something like, yeah, my friend has boats, and he honors them, he drives them to slaughter, and he, puts his hand on them and prays for them, and I said, you know, that is not really changing the suffering of the animal. It really has more to do with him being able to sleep at night.
That's
that has
exactly.
nothing to do with the animal. The animal doesn't want to die. The animal doesn't want to go there, and he resists. And it was almost the first time that he had someone actually counter that, because if you're surrounding yourself with like-minded people, everyone else goes, yeah, that's true. I know, it's really lovely. Because nobody says anything that opposes it. So,
What I like about a lot of the stuff that you're doing is that you're using food as sort of an entry into talking
yep.
about a lot of these issues, and you do it quite well. And I'm wondering if you could maybe, if you have any advice for people who want to do this in their daily lives, you know, use food as kind of an entry point into talking about issues around animal rights and veganism and things like that.
Absolutely. It's so powerful. It's really, really powerful, because I think that's one of the big mysteries for people. I mean, you know that all the questions we get about nutrition and food, I mean, the most absurd question vegans get is, what do you eat? I mean, so one of the things I always talk about is how people are already eating vegan food. They're just not calling it vegan. They're eating plants. They're eating vegetables and fruits and nuts and seeds and beans and grains and spices and herbs. I mean, they're eating all the things that are plant-based. They're just not calling them vegan. So if we can really demystify that for people, I think it's really powerful. And feeding them good food, because the bottom line is, if the food is good, they will eat it. And, of course, the food is good. Learning the preparation is just like learning the preparation for any cuisine. There's a learning curve, but you're not always in that learning curve. So I always tell people that it has nothing to do with the flesh of the animal that they're desiring. It has to do with texture, and it has to do with flavor. So if we can get more people to do these kinds of classes, I think it's really, really vital, and it really works. I mean, I see people all the time changing, and like I said, it is an entryway to talk about the animal stuff that they're not going to show up for if I just invited them to talk about it necessarily.
Yeah, yeah. Before Bob asked the question, I was just about to say that what I really like about your approach is that it combines a lot of things. Like, the food is the entryway, but then you tell people all about the animal industry, and you're not afraid, because people seem to compartmentalize often one or the other. They'll either talk about food or they'll either talk about the animals. And I think you do a really good job at combining them and really opening up the discussions. And you also do tours of sanctuaries, is that correct?
Yeah, I've been going to Farm Sanctuary here in the California shelter for many years, and I know all the animals personally. They're just amazing. And so I take people up and do tours of the farm, which is really nice because we get to kind of linger, whereas if you go to the farm and just go on one of their standard tours, you kind of have to rush through within that hour. But we get to linger and really hang out with the goats or the cattle or what have you. And it's really, really powerful experience. And again, this is one of the situations where I bring up Farm Sanctuary and people say, oh, I'd love to go there. And then the next day I'm calling them and saying, okay, when would you like to go? Let's go. So they have to be really careful what they say around me. But it's really transformative, because I think one of the reasons we can do to animals that we kill for human consumption is because we don't have relationships with them. We don't live with them in our homes. And when we go and have a relationship and have an interaction with a goat or a chicken or a turkey, especially the turkeys, people have the most transformative experiences with the turkeys. They, for the first time, realize that they have the same reactions that their dogs or cats or animals that are familiar to them have. And they, for the first time, realize there's no difference, and they don't want to be part of that anymore. So it's really powerful, and I love being part of that.
That's excellent. Yeah, because we took a tour of the Farm Sanctuary here in New York, and we saw some of the other groups go past, and I was wondering, is it hard to get people to make that connection? I mean, do these people go back and then eat turkey, or is this, how do you, I guess my question is, how do you really get that connection to stick?
Well, one of the things I do is I show meet your meat before we go out on the tour. So that really helps make a connection. Farm Sanctuary has their own video they show before their tours, but they know I come in with meet your meat, and that's what I show. So that's one thing, and that's one of the most powerful experiences. If you've witnessed people witnessing that video, it's very powerful and emotional for people. So that's really the first part of it, and then going out and seeing the animals who would have otherwise gone through those situations, or who already had gone through those situations. So that's the first part of it. And honestly, one of my favorite parts about the whole thing is the ride up and the ride back, because all the questions start to happen, all the questions start to come, and we get to have this dialogue, and it's a two-hour drive, so they can't escape. So you really get to talk about this stuff thoroughly. And then before we get into each area where we meet each animal, we talk about specifically the situation that they're in, their particular species, their breed, you know, their species, whatever is in factory farming. So we get to talk about that. We get to talk about how, you know, most of the cattle there will have been veal calves, and they were there because of the dairy industry. There's no such thing as a veal industry if there's no dairy industry. And we get to talk about all those things, and then we meet them. So there's a lot of layers to it. And people are usually pretty emotional and exhausted by the time they leave there. And I hear from many of them who've either gone vegetarian, gone vegan, afterwards, and really had profound experiences. Now, that's not to say I don't also know people who go back to eating meat afterwards, and that's really frustrating for me. It's not the fault of Farm Sanctuary or the experience they had. Rather, what I find is that a lot of these people move in the circles where there's other non-vegetarians, and like I said before, if we're moving around in those circles and we don't have kind of a reminder, and that's what they've said too, like, oh my gosh, I almost have to watch that again or go back there again because I need that experience. Now, I don't understand that. My experience was, once I found this out, I didn't want to have anything to do with it. And it was immediate, but especially by the time I went vegan, and the transformation was an awakening, which many people have, where my eyes were opened and I couldn't imagine going back. So we just don't know. All I can say is that everything I do, I try to just plant seeds, and I try not to have an attachment to what the outcome is going to be, because it's not mine. It's not mine, and I would be insane if I try to control that, and it would be really inappropriate. So I try to plant seeds, and I do know that all those seeds really make a difference, and it might be one last thing they need, it might be one more push, it might be one thing they see on the news, it might be one animal they pass on the street, who knows, but at least each one of them creates the potential for transformation.
I think it's really important, the point you just raised about planting seeds. I mean, because I think a lot of us get frustrated when we talk to people about these things, or we're asked about these things, and we notice that people aren't really changing. But I think a lot of people, it just takes time. It has to kind of percolate through all the layers of growing up in this culture in which we are always abusing animals one way or another.
And the blocking mechanisms are so strong, definitely. Yeah. So tell us a little bit more about how you became vegan.
I first stopped eating land animals when I read Diet for New America when I was 19, which was many years ago now. Hey, and yeah, it was the first time I had ever seen any of those photos or read about factory farming. I had no idea. And it's amazing that we can go through our lives. And 19 isn't even that old, but, you know, for me, but thinking about, gosh, 19 years, you know, I didn't know any of this stuff. And that really started me on a path that really, really changed my life. I mean, I had done animal activism before then. I was really focusing a lot on anti-vivisection and puppy mills, but I hadn't worked on factory farming. So it really changed everything for me, and that started me on a path of wanting to find out everything I could possibly find out. And in the meantime, I was still eating eggs and chicken's eggs and cow's milk, and I don't know, I had a disconnect, you know. That's what I think is really important for all of us activists to remember, is that we have to remember our own stories, because I certainly wasn't perfect, and I certainly didn't just happen for me. So a few years later, reading more books, and the book that really changed my life was Slaughterhouse by Gail Eisnitz. She's mm-hmm. the investigative journalist who went in and investigated their slaughterhouses around the country and interviewed the slaughterhouse workers and asked the same questions to all of the workers and had the same answers in all of the slaughterhouses. And it was the most painful experience reading this book. It was incredibly painful, but it was the thing I needed to really understand that no matter where they come from, they could be on the happiest happiest farm, which of course is a myth as well, but the ultimate end is horrific, the transportation of the slaughter. Mm. And that was really what changed me. And that was about 7 years ago, when I read that.
Excellent. Yeah, and you make a point in your most recent Satya article that the problem isn't that we, you know, the way we raise animals, it's that we eat meat. And I think that reading, talking about slaughterhouses and about all of that, learning about it really hits home when you bring that point up.
What people don't understand, especially when people say things like, well, I don't really care, you know, I don't think they really mean this when they say I don't really care about the animals, I care about humans, is that if you really did, then you still can support this industry. It is the most violent industry. The people make a living, barely, they don't make a living, killing. And if you think that doesn't affect people when they go home at night, then you're kidding yourself, because they're beating their wives, they're beating their kids, they're beating their own animals at home, and that's the environment they're in every day. So the things that were so horrific about Slaughterhouse, reading Slaughterhouse, was not just the slaughter itself, was not just, you know, hoisting them up and slitting their throats and bleeding. It was the torture that the workers inflict upon the animals because they can't. If you give any kind of unlimited power, look at Abu Ghraib, any kind of unlimited, unchecked power to one group over another group, that is what happens. And they're in such stressful circumstances, and they have to meet these quotas that, I mean, we all get frustrated and we kick drawers. We know what that's like when we're just in so much stress and so much angst, and we'll just, you know, and that's what they do in day in and day out to the animals. Things I can't even name. I mean, cutting off snouts and rubbing salt into their wounds, and the horrific investigations we've seen PETA and other groups do of chicken processing plants and ripping their beaks. I mean, just horrific stuff. It's just above and beyond the actual slaughter.
Mm-hmm. It really is horrible.
What's that?
It's completely horrible. I read something a number of years ago by a French anarchist who kind of made the argument that as long as we're slaughtering animals, that's also influencing the way in which we go about as a society treating other people. So as long as we can always marginalize or create that kind of other, we're always going to be able to very easily create that other with human beings. And he thought this, Elise Eric Liu was his name, he thought that the only way we're ever going to create a society that was nonviolent was to stop animal slaughter. And certainly the kinds of things you're talking about hit right to that point.
Exactly, and you don't have to work in the slaughterhouse to be part of that violence. There are people who also believe just that, you know, you said before about, I mean, I've read things where people talk about the youth of the lamb, the youthfulness of the lamb that was killed is fused in your body. And it's ridiculous stuff, but by the same token, they would understand that the stress and the pain and the fear of that animal would be infused in the meat. Now, this is not what but I'm just saying, if you believe that, then you're consuming all of it. You're consuming that violence. You're consuming that fear. And I mean, I do believe that it's in the body of that dead animal. And that's just one component of it, just being desensitized to the fact that we're killing so many animals a year. Seeing slabs of flesh and not really seeing that for as an animal. All of that stuff contributes to desensitizing ourselves to violence towards anybody. It's all connected. That's what I love about Satya Magazine so much, is that it makes the connections between all those social justice groups. I've been involved with many different social justice groups, and that mentality, it's so frustrating because they tend to stop at non-human animals, and they just don't get it that if there wasn't the violence towards the non-human animals, there would be so much less violence towards humans. It's all the same.
That's a great point. Excellent. Yeah, and I was so happy to see that the next issue of Satya is going to continue along the whole ethical eating dilemma, so I'm looking forward to that issue.
Definitely.
Tell us a little bit about your podcast as well.
The podcast grew out of those questions that I get in the classes via email, and all the bold myths, the questions people have. So I just started responding. I just would rather do that than write them all out, because I think there's intricacies that you just really can't cover, or people aren't going to read in a long answer. And I never have simple answers for anything. People know if they ask me a question, it's not going to be a yes or no answer, because these are complicated issues in some ways. And I really want to get to the heart of it. What I really try to do with the podcast and with all of the responses I have to people is to get underneath so that they can figure it out for themselves. That's why I call it food for thought. I'm not here to tell anybody what to think or to believe what I believe, but if you're asking me, then you're trusting that I might have some insight. And so my goal is, again, to just raise awareness so that you can walk away at least processing it and thinking about it on your own. So, for instance, when people say things like, you know, where am I going to get calcium on a plant-based diet, I could just say, well, you can get calcium from kale. You can get it from green leafy vegetables. But what I want people to understand is that you can do that because the reason cow's milk has calcium is because those are the vegetables they're eating. They get calcium from plants. Calcium is a mineral. Calcium is in the ground. So what we're doing is actually going through an animal, having her eat the calcium so that we can have her pregnant, have her gestate for 9 months, take her baby, take her milk, and then kill her. Or we could just eat the kale. You know, it's just absurd that we go through all of this to get the calcium that they're getting from the source in the first place. Of course, they're not really eating kale, and they're not really eating grass. They're eating calcium supplements because they're confined on dry lots and they aren't getting the grass, so they supplement their feed with calcium. So it's just absurd that we go through all of this, use up so many resources, and kill these animals for something we can get directly from the source itself. So that's the kind of thing I like to do in the podcast, is let's get underneath this and help people really think about it on their own.
That's a great idea. Where can people find your podcast at?
Well, everything's at the website, Compassionate Cooks, with an S, plural, CompassionateCooks.com. And they can listen to the podcast. They can read essays from the newsletter. They can read articles, letters to the editor, interviews. They can buy the DVD. I really encourage people to check out the DVD. Again, it was made as an extension from the cooking classes to give access to people, so vegetarians who, you know, who've ever heard anything from their family members that said, I don't know what to make you, what should I make, what can you eat, what about the holidays, we cover all of this, we do lots of really delicious dishes, we have a whole frequently asked questions section, we focus on the holidays, we have a beautiful stuffed squash, so I really encourage people to check out the DVD, you can watch a clip of it, it's really entertaining. Alka Channa, who's with PETA, was my co-host, she and I used to teach cooking classes together before she moved to Virginia to work for PETA, so it's really fun, entertaining, and I think informative DVD.
Excellent. And as we close out, there are a surprising number of people who listen to our show who are not vegan, and we always ask all of our guests on the show, what would you tell these people to get them to go vegan?
I would tell them to just open their minds, open their hearts, and look at the truth. I think the bottom line for people when they're not making choices such as, I mean, if you're already thinking about it, it's not, what I want to say is that at least make a choice that reflects your own values, because I don't think people are really living the values they say they have. They say they're compassionate, they say they care about nonviolence, they say they care about animals, and if you really want to live according to your own values, then perhaps you might want to consider making the plunge.
Excellent.
Thank you. And I'd encourage everybody to go check out your website because it's perfect. It reaches such a wide a range of audience. I mean, you've got things for people who are already vegan, things for people who are, I think, on the verge of going vegan, and things for non-vegans who are just very curious and who need to learn more about all the great things we eat. So I encourage you all to check out their website. And thank you so much for being with us today.
Thank you. Thank you both for what you do.
All right. Thanks once again to Colleen for talking with us.
That's right. It was interesting to hear her perspective on things.
And definitely. Yeah, it was a very cool interview. I really enjoyed it.
It was. And we're always happy to talk to folks. If you think you know somebody that we should be interviewing, let us know.